Hello, everybody, and welcome to another beautiful Thursday morning. You're listening to Bhavani at IE Green on the Progressive Radio Network. And I'm so happy to be here with all of you today on this beautiful, gorgeous Thursday morning. The sun is shining, and I'm so happy to see it. And I have a lot to talk about today. I want to tell you about what's going on in around the city and things you can participate in. Of course, I want to share my weekly recipe with you and introduce my guest to you today, who will be Alicia Newton. She is the founder and executive director of Nourish My Soul, and she will be coming on in a little bit to tell us more about that. So I would like to start by sharing with you that I saw a great show this past weekend. I saw a Network on Broadway starring Bryan Cranston, and it was just so great. I had pretty much forgotten about the movie. It was so long ago. But the premise or the theme of this show is a news anchorman who is getting fired, basically, because his ratings were so low and the network was losing money on him. So they were firing him. And in that process of him unwinding, he basically had a nervous breakdown. So on his last show, his last broadcast, he got on the air and talked about, you know, his breakdown, or that how frustrated he was about the world and how he couldn't take it anymore, and told everyone to go to their windows and open their windows and yell out, "I'm mad as hell and I can't take it anymore." And it spoke so much to me, because every day I feel like doing that. I am so frustrated with what's going on in the world. Right now, our government, with the close down of the government, or the shutdown due to a president who is basically, you know, trying to throw around his power and have a temper tantrum because he's not getting his way, is just unbelievable. And last night I saw the movie Vice, which was also unbelievable, to think of what goes on behind the closed doors and the lack of transparency in our government, and what can be done in the name of democracy, is just appalling. And so, you know, I was really kind of excited to read about this formation of this new to me organization called Extinction Rebellion, which is really trying to mobilize people who are just fed up, can't take it anymore, kind of like the Occupy Wall Street movement, but people who just cannot take it anymore, to come together and to really take to the streets. Because what's happening so much right now is people are frustrated, but you almost just, it's overload. You know, we're bombarded from so many different areas that we just get overloaded and can't even really focus on anything other than just getting through every day, one day at a time. And as much as I am a person that is in the moment, and I also just need to take care of one day at a time, I also need to look out towards the future and see what's going on and do something about it. Of course, the Women's March is coming up, which is a wonderful thing. Unfortunately, the Northeast Organic Farming Association, the New York chapter, has their winter conference the same weekend. And I am newly joining the board of NOFA New York. And so I hope to actually talk to them about maybe changing the date of their conferences in the future so that we can participate in the NOFA Winter Conference and at the Women's March, because I am going to be missing the Women's March this year. And that does not feel very good to me, because I love being there. I love being in that energy. And so in that energy, this new organization called Extinction Rebellion, you can look it up, there's Extinction Rebellion NYC, and they're actually having a meeting this coming Saturday from 2 to 5 at the Manhattan Quaker Meeting House. And they're going to have live music and food and special guests, and you can learn more about this movement of really trying to get people to take to the streets. And it started in the UK, and in the process of them taking to the streets, they have really made some changes and gotten some commitments from their government to work towards climate change. But climate change is rolling in. It's coming fast, and if we don't do something about it, it will be too late. And it's already really late. We've been having these warnings for years now, and we've been doing nothing about it, nothing that's really impacting it. And so we really need to all take this really seriously. It's not going to go away unless we turn things around. One thing that I'm talking to a group about later today is on food waste and the amount that food waste contributes to climate change is astounding. I mean, we talk about, you know, a billion people in the world that are starving, you know, and 400 million that are obese. And, you know, it's all from the same problem. It's, you know, it's cheap food, and it's not lack of food, it's wasted food. We have enough food that we're growing and wasting that we could feed all those hungry people four times over. We just really need to start addressing the problems that we have, and the governments that we are under don't really want to do it because it's, you know, good for business to keep it this way, but it's not good for the people and it's not good for the planet. So we need to put the people's needs ahead of capitalism and really start making a change. So I hope to see some of you at the Extinction Rebellion meeting on Saturday from 2 to 5 at the Manhattan Quaker Meeting House. And go online and look up Extinction Rebellion. There may be other chapters happening in other parts of the country. I'm not really sure about that. But there's certainly women marches taking place in other parts of the country if you can't get to Washington, D.C. or to New York for that. But anyway, back to the Broadway Show Network. If you can manage to get to this New York City and see this Broadway show, I highly recommend it. Bryan Cranston was amazing in the play. It was done really creatively, and we all need to really get mad. We need to get mad. The movie I saw on Vice last night really helped get me mad, too, because it was just unbelievable. You know, the whole going to war with Iraq and, you know, proof of weapons of mass destruction that didn't really happen, and Halliburton and the profit that Cheney made on the war that we all fought and the lives that were lost, et cetera, et cetera. It just was unbelievable. So if you haven't seen that movie yet, I highly recommend you seeing that. On a higher note, I did have the opportunity to go to the Healthier Long Island Challenge Growing Healthier Students Conference this past Tuesday, and that was wonderful because my dear friend Stephen Ritz, who is the founder of the Green Bronx Machine and is rocking it up in the South Bronx, was the keynote speaker, and he talked about the work he's doing with the kids up in the Bronx. And, you know, at first he was working more with the high school kids, and now he's really loving working with the young kids and getting them from the very beginning. But what he's doing there is just amazing. He has changed the trajectory of these children's lives 100%. You know, now they are coming to school, they are passing, they are doing well. He's even graduating some that are going on, you know, some kids that are going on to the Bronx High School of Science and Math. He's just doing amazing, amazing stuff. And it's all through growing vegetables and getting kids excited about taking care of something and watching something grow. And it's just a beautiful, beautiful thing. And many of these kids are getting jobs. They're building green roofs around the world. It's just amazing. So if you don't know about Stephen Ritz and the Green Bronx Machine, check that out online as well. So I want to share with you this week's recipe. I realize I did do a vegan frittata a few months ago, but this is a broccoli mushroom quiche that I made vegan. And, you know, I don't, if I'm looking for a vegan dish, I'm not looking to make a mock quiche. But if I'm doing a brunch for people and I know that I have some vegans that are attending, this is a great, easy, quick dish that you can make that lets them feel like they're being included and they're being cared for. And it's very simple and it doesn't take much work, especially if you buy the vegan pie shell to start with, which is what I'm going to recommend you do. So you can buy the vegan pie shell, and this recipe makes two vegan pies or vegan quiches. So the pie shells come in a package of two, and that's why I did it that way. So you need, in addition to the pie shells, 2 tablespoons of ground flaxseed. And I buy my flaxseed already ground, but you need to keep it stored in a glass-tight jar in the refrigerator so it doesn't get rancid. 1 tablespoon of apple cider vinegar and 1 tablespoon of water. 1 block of tofu. I used soft, but you could also use firm. It doesn't really matter. 1 cup of coconut milk. 1/2 teaspoon salt. 1/8 teaspoon white pepper. 1 teaspoon chopped garlic. 1/2 teaspoon turmeric, 1/4 teaspoon of nutmeg, 2 tablespoons plus 1 tablespoon for garnishing afterwards of fresh chopped parsley, 2 tablespoons of Dijon mustard, 1 broccoli cut into florets, 1 onion diced, 10 baby portobello mushrooms sliced, 2 cups of fresh spinach, but actually that's wrong. This is a broccoli one. You could put spinach in it too, but you could leave the spinach out. It's up to you. 1 cup of cherry tomatoes cut in half, 1 teaspoon dried oregano, 1 teaspoon dried basil, 1 tablespoon mirin, and 1 tablespoon tamari. Mirin is a sweet rice wine that just sweetens the vegetables. When after you stir fry them, you put them in, it just gives the vegetables a great flavor. And tamari is a fermented soy sauce that is wheat free. So you're going to soften the 2 tablespoons of ground flaxseed in 1 tablespoon of apple cider vinegar and 1 tablespoon of water and let that sit for 10 minutes. And the flaxseed becomes glutinous and kind of takes on the consistency of an egg. And that's used to help hold everything together in this recipe, the way an egg would. And in the meantime, in a food processor, combine the tofu, the salt and pepper, the nutritional yeast, the turmeric, the garlic, the nutmeg, and the coconut milk. And pulse that until it's really smooth. Add the apple cider vinegar with the flaxseed to that mixture. Pulse it again. while you're doing that, or you can just go over to the stove and in a heavy saucepan, saute the onions until they're translucent. Add the broccoli and cook for a few more minutes. Add the portobello mushrooms. Then add the tomatoes. Add the spinach, if you're going to use the spinach too, the oregano and the basil. When they're cooked, you're going to season with the mirin. That also will help deglaze the pan if anything's sticking to the pan. And add the tamari. Add the 2 tablespoons of parsley and cook it until it's soft and most of that liquid has evaporated. And if there's any extra liquid, you do want to drain the liquid because you don't want the mixture to be too wet. You're going to cover the bottom of the pie shells with the mustard. So you put the Dijon mustard over the bottom of the pie crust. Then you add the vegetables, and then you pour in the tofu mixture over the vegetables. And you'll need to spread it out evenly with a spatula. You're going to bake it in an oven 15 minutes at 425, and then reduce the temperature to 375 and bake for another 30 minutes. And depending on your oven, you know, my oven, the back of the oven's hotter, so I switch the quiches around halfway through. And that's it. And it looks like a regular quiche, it cuts like a regular quiche, and it tastes very similar to a regular quiche, but it tastes delicious. So do make it, enjoy it, let me know how you like it. And before I invite my guest on, I just want to tell you about a few things going on in the area that you may want to participate in. Tonight, locally here on Long Island, there's a documentary screening of Generation Zapped, which is a documentary on the potential dangers of prolonged exposure to radio frequencies, meaning cell phones, smart chalkboards. I mean, you know, our kids are in school sitting in classrooms that are all wired for 6 hours a day. You know, does that have an effect on them? Anyway, following the presentation, Patty Wood, who is the director of grassroots environmental education and has a wealth of knowledge, she will be leading a discussion and Q&A, and that's at the Cinema Arts Center in Huntington. Then on January 14th, there's a workshop about green roofs. It's Greening the Concrete Jungle, and it's an intro to green roofs with Alan Burchell at AgTech in Brooklyn. If you're interested in that, there is the NOFA Winter Conference coming up next weekend, January 18th and 19th, and we are honoring this year Sag Lee Farms. They are receiving an award for the work that they're doing. So if you can come to the NOFA conference, that's fun. There's, you know, square dancing or, you know, music, films, great food. It's just a wonderful time and lots of wonderful workshops. But it's also the Women's March, as I mentioned, January 19th. The Women's March, either in Washington, D.C., or in New York City. Just go online and Google it. There's women sister marches all across the country. So hopefully you can participate in that. Restaurant Week is coming up January 21st to February 8th in New York. You want to check that out as well. And then there is the Real Truth Health Conference coming back to the Hilton here on Long Island in Melville. Even if you're in the city, it is worth coming out to Melville. It's not far out from the city, about 40 minutes, but it's worth it. This conference is 10 days of free talks with some of the world's top authors. Vandana Shiva, who I love, she will be there February 1st, 2nd, and 3rd. First as a part of a panel on food diversity and GMOs. Jeffrey Smith will be there, who wrote Genetic Roulette. Just great, great doctors, you know, talking about the health benefits of eating a plant-forward diet. Really great speakers. So go onto the website called The Real Truth About Health Conference.com. And you can get the schedule, you can get the list, and I really recommend it. And then we all need to work towards our state leading the way in divesting. So there's a divestment lobby day. That means to divest all of our investments from fossil fuels and put them towards renewable energies. And there's a big movement that happening on campuses around the country. And, you know, that really has an impact. You know, as we all say, money talks. If you follow the money, well, if we pull the money out of fossil fuel companies and put them into renewable energies, those fossil fuel companies are going to listen. So please do that. And now it's my pleasure to introduce to all of you Alicia Newton, who is the founder and executive director of Nourish My Soul, which is a nonprofit organization that's dedicated to improving the food system through community-based agriculture, nutritional education, and youth empowerment. And she does all that while advocating for food sovereignty. And her passion is to use healthy food to heal more than just the body, but also the mind and the spirit. And I'm going to let her tell us more about it. Alicia, are you with me?
I am.
Welcome. Thank you for joining me today.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm really excited, especially listening to your opening. You know, a lot of that resonated with me, so I appreciate being here.
Great. Great. So tell us a little bit about Nourish My Soul. When did you start it? What was your inspiration in getting it going?
Well, I was in private practice as a nutritionist for quite some time, and growing increasingly frustrated that I was getting referrals for patients to come to me after they have a serious diagnosis or when they're on the brink of a serious diagnosis. And trying to change those habits was really difficult. You know, they're so ingrained. And one of the things that I kept hearing over and over in those sessions was that they had to, you know, adults were feeling like they had to have these things in their house so they didn't deprive their family members, especially their children.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and, you know, I kept trying to reinforce that what's good for you is also good for your children, and making sure that they are nourished properly will prevent them from headed down this path. But, you know, food carries a lot of emotional baggage as well. So that inspired me to prove to parents that, in fact, their kids will enjoy eating healthy. So mm-hmm. that kind of propelled me. While I was still in private practice, I started kind of cooking classes and teaching kids how to grow food and youth empowerment around food. And it became extremely successful, and it just made me realize that I could do this instead and have a larger impact. So in 2016, I officially launched Nourish My Soul as a nonprofit and left the, you know, one-on-one counseling world.
Mm-hmm. That's great. You know, I think as we get older, we really want, and we have a passion, we want to share it. We want to get that word out there and impact, as you said, as many people as you can. So tell us about it. How does it work?
Well, it's based on the premise that when you grow food, it is an act of love for the earth. When you prepare food, it's an act of love for yourself. And then when you share that food, it's an act of love that you're extending to others. So everything's kind of built around that concept. And we are completely youth-driven. So while I run classes, it's, you know, I'm there to facilitate, but I really want to empower young people to take the lead because, like you were talking about your frustration earlier before I came on, and I definitely feel that in the world right now. But what helps me to ease that is giving permission to the young people who are also frustrated because this is the world that they've inherited and seeing their ideas and being empowered to act on them. You know, they're radically different. They don't like the way that we've consistently done things, and they have ideas of ways of doing things differently. As adults, we tend to, you know, quiet them and say, oh, no, that it won't work that way. This is the way we do things. But we've had great success in, you know, giving kids the tools to actually bring their ideas to life.
Mm-hmm. You want to share a lot of those examples with us?
Sure. So our young people have they have developed farmers markets when they realized that access was an issue. They have started a food rescue program. So our high school leadership group really studies food systems in depth, and they recognize that food waste, like you had mentioned earlier, is a huge contributor to so many problems that we have within our food system, and also it impacts our environment more than I would gather to assume that it's more than anything else. It's a really big issue. We're throwing away 40% of our food supply.
Right.
And so they wanted to tackle that, and so they began rescuing food waste from farms and grocery stores, and then repurposing that along with some of our youth and other programs and feeding the community for free. So in just 1 year, they have fed over 1,000 people.
That's so great. So great. You know, I actually am going to talk to a group after this show about food waste and food rescue. And, you know, one of the things in my, you know, I want to say just in my research for this presentation, but not really because I'm aware of this, but so many supermarkets, when they throw out these massive amounts of food, they either lock the dumpster or they pour some chemical on the food to ruin it so that people can't take it out of the dumpster. It's like they don't want people to get free food. They think it's bad for their business, you know, so they'd rather damage the food so people can't rescue it. It's infuriating.
Yeah, it is. Mm. And they're also under the misconception that you know, someone might get sick and then come after them. I think that probably is a piece of it, too.
Although they know at this point there's, you know, there's the Good Samaritan law, and if someone didn't buy it, they know that they're not really liable. That they use that as an excuse, but they know that they would not be found guilty if that ever happened, you know?
Yes, and it's fascinating because we empower our youth. I want them to take leadership roles, so I don't handhold. They have an idea, I help them develop a plan, and then they implement it. So when they were starting this project, they were meeting with grocery store managers and asking them about their food waste management and how much food they waste and, you know, where it's going and all of that. And every single one of them was telling them that they had no food waste and that they already had things in place to mitigate any food that could be donated.
Mm-hmm.
And they wouldn't talk to them any further. So I started going with them and pressing the issue and got acted excited and said, you know, this is fantastic that you aren't wasting any food. Can we come in the back and see your process? So in that, we got a bird's eye view. We got to actually see the massive amount of food that they're wasting, and they don't even, I don't think it's even registering that that food can be repurposed, because I think genuinely they thought that they were doing all the right things.
Mm-hmm. Right, so they have a compactor, so it looks like less. Right?
Right.
Oh, we compacted, so it's not waste. You know, it's like, still weighs as much, it still is as much. Yeah, it's just amazing. So what age group are you working with mostly?
We work with ages, actually, five all the way up to college. But our high school leadership program is the one that really sets the precedent for our programs and the direction that we're going to take every year, our big projects.
Mm-hmm.
But we have younger programs as well that focus on different things. We've kind of tiered it. So we have our youngest, which is 5 to 9, and those are, you know, very basic. It's called Growing Healthy Kids. We do very active lessons where they're running around learning about nutrition and where food comes from, and then they prepare a simple snack together. And then we have our junior chefs, which actually get into real culinary skills, and that's ages 10 to 13. And we chose that purposely because middle school age kids are finding their niche, and there's a lot of social angst that goes into that age and finding your place and what it means and social hierarchies. And also, you know, a lot of the kids fall through the cracks at that age if they don't play a sport or, you know, fit into one of the other popular things that schools offer. So we offer this program, and it's pretty intense culinary knowledge and getting kids to explore food. We've had children that come, you know, parents sign them up because their child refuses to eat any vegetables. And we found that by the end of the program, they've felt empowered to find the vegetables and the method of preparing them that they'll enjoy.
Mm-hmm.
So that's really exciting. And then they're bringing that home and teaching their families, which is great.
Right, right. And then after junior chefs, what do you have for the high schoolers?
The high school is called From the Ground Up, and that is a year-long intensive program that they commit to. They meet weekly, sometimes more, year-round, so that includes the summer. And they are learning about food systems and then analyzing their community to find deficits in their food system and gaps, and then they develop a project around that information to implement. And then they also grow food in community gardens alongside veterans and distribute that food to people in need.
Mm-hmm. And are they still cooking as well?
They do some cooking. They cook in partnership. So they do the community dinners. They're, you know, rescuing the food, and then they are doing the community dinners, and that is alongside the junior chefs.
Mm-hmm.
And some veterans actually assist as well. But at that point, most of them have been exposed to our junior chef program, so they know some of that. And those that haven't, it's kind of neat to see them learning from the younger kids. So it's a shared learning experience.
Right. And where do your programs take place? Is this like an after-school program that parents sign up? You mentioned parents sign up. Or is it affiliated with schools and taking place in the school?
It's actually currently it is taking place in community centers. And sometimes we do programming in schools. We also do it at there's a military base in our service area, and we do it there sometimes for children of active duty military. But most of our programs currently are in community centers, and people can sign up through their town or directly through us. We have some buses that run from schools to those programs in certain towns.
Mm-hmm.
We are looking
at... So you're getting funded with grants, or do parents pay for this program?
So parents who can will pay for it. And then we also get grant funding as well. We want everyone to have access to it. One of our key components of Nourish My Soul is that we believe that while other nonprofits are there to serve, you know, those that they consider to be the have-nots is what we tend to call them, you know, the haves and the have-nots. Our premise is that what we have to offer and what we're bringing to people are things that everybody needs. It's not based on socioeconomic status. You know, the wealthy families have been sold the same line as others, where, you know, we don't have time. You know, food isn't as important. Don't invest your time into that. You can go purchase prepackaged foods or stop at a fast food restaurant or eat out somewhere. Don't invest your time in that because it's not valued. So, you know, so on that end of the spectrum, they also are missing out and need to have this information and, you know, be reintroduced to how food grows and how to prepare it and how to share a meal together. Versus, you know, the other end of the spectrum where we have people that know that information and are doing really well preparing food on what little they have, but access is an issue, you know, whether it be for finances or because they live in a food desert. So, you know,
Are you basically in one town or are you in many towns?
We're in many towns right now. We service 6 towns in our area, and they differ greatly. We are primarily in East Granby, Connecticut, and then we also service Granby, Connecticut, Heartland, Simsbury, Windsor Locks, and East Hartford. So we have a lot of interesting mix in that. But we're actually looking at a school building because one of our challenges is when you're traveling to different places, your equipment has to be light and you have to be able to, you know, transport it, carry it around. It has to fit in a vehicle and, you know, that can be challenging. So we're looking at a abandoned school to create into a large community center. It's 40,000 square feet. And then 6,000 square feet would become home to Nourish My Soul with teaching kitchens and a community cafe and all kinds of things.
Oh, that would be exciting. Very exciting. Yeah. One of the organizations I work with, the River Fund, they're looking at buying a building, and I've been talking to them for years. I've cooked for their community of people in need for the past 24 years. You know, I cook 84 turkeys. You know, we cook like 1,000 people for Thanksgiving and Christmas. But I've fantasized for years with my friend who runs the River Fund about having a kitchen and, you know, creating community service and a pay-forward type of restaurant, you know, where anybody can eat and all those kind of ideas that, you know, are constantly circulating that I'd love to see come into a reality. So it's always exciting when you can take that next step and really see some of your dreams come to life.
Yes, I've seen it work. You know, our kids are doing it now. Of course, it's only currently because we are traveling and we have to coordinate space for these things to happen. It's only happening monthly that they're doing these meals. But, you know, with the amount of calls that they're getting with food that needs to be rescued, they could easily be doing it on a more frequent basis. They could be having a daily cafe with, you know, soups and other casseroles and things available.
Let's take a couple-minute break. When we come back, I want to hear about some of the community outreach projects that your kids are doing. So, everyone, don't go anywhere. I'm talking with Alicia Newton from Nourish My Soul, and you're listening to Bhavani at IE Green on the Progressive Radio Network. Be right back.
Stay tuned to PRN.FM for more empowering ideas from progressive voices. We're moving forward, and we hope you're coming with us.
Hey, it's Jesse, PRN station manager. I have an exciting announcement for our amazing listeners. PRN has a new voicemail line that will allow you to connect better with our hosts. If you can't listen live but have a question or comment for one of our hosts, just call 862-800-6805. That's 862-800-6805. This feature will allow your voice to be heard on your favorite PRN show.
Thank you for listening to the Progressive Radio Network.
Hi, this is Dr. Cheryl Selman, and I am the host of The Love Code. As a naturopathic doctor, psychotherapist, author, lecturer, and lifelong spiritual seeker, The Love Code is an opportunity to expand inspiration, transformation, and rejuvenation in your life. Every Saturday morning, I have inspiring conversations with people who are living extraordinary lives, dedicated to service, dedicated to healing, and dedicated to transforming consciousness on this planet. If you're ready for your dose of inspiration, transformation, and rejuvenation, then I invite you to join me every Saturday morning at 11 a.m. Eastern Time on The Love Code. See you there.
You're listening to PRN, Progressive Radio Network.
Everybody, and welcome back. You're listening to Bhavani at IE Green on the Progressive Radio Network, and I'm here with my guest, Alicia Newton from Nourish My Soul, and we're talking about her nonprofit organization that is bringing agriculture and healthy eating to young people in Connecticut. So, Alicia, we were talking about some of the community outreach projects that your students are participating in. Can you share some of those with us?
Yes. Aside from our high school leaders that I already touched on, our junior chef program, each session, which is a six-week session, culminates in the kids deciding what they want to do to give back to the community with their new skills. So they develop the idea around discussions about, you know, thinking about who in our community is often overlooked or could use an extra boost in some way, or a thank you, or recognition that they are loved and cared for. So some of the things that they've come up with are, one of my favorites was cooking for families with children that have disabilities, because one of the chefs was talking about how they must feel so isolated because they can't participate in things that other families with kids can participate in as easily. So they held a dinner for them. That was really fun. They've also done senior citizens that normally, you know, don't have companionship at dinner time, you know, that may be feeling lonely and isolated. So we worked with towns to help us identify those senior citizens and invite them and also transport them, because a lot of them, you know, can't drive, especially in the evenings.
Right.
And then they've also done cooking and eating with veterans or their teachers and the school support staff. So, you know, they said they were talking about how teachers always get all of the glory, but, you know, sometimes the custodians or the music teacher doesn't necessarily get all of that that excitement. So they've done that. They've also done, you know, Department of Public Works. There was one year where we had snowstorm after snowstorm, so our classes kept getting rescheduled. And so the conversation came up with, wow, you know, our public works has been really busy. You know, they've had to plow all those days. Let's say thank you. So they did a dinner for them. So, you know, librarians, anything that they can think of. And they've had some really great ideas, things that I wouldn't have thought of.
Mm-hmm. Great. And you also have teaching gardens, right? You said you're growing vegetables with them. Where are those gardens?
They currently we have them. We have a couple churches that we have large community gardens in, and then we also have one in a public housing complex and in an area of the city that, you know, everyone warned us about that's, you know, dangerous and shouldn't be going there, and, you know, people are going to steal, which that always makes me chuckle. You know, if they're stealing vegetables, that's great. That means they're healthy.
Right.
Yeah. So that one actually was one of my favorite success stories, because now it's pretty self-sustaining. They're teaching each other, and you go there to visit, and they're, you know, all sharing what they grow from their countries, their native countries, and grilling out in the yard with it, and it's really fun.
Yeah, we have a community garden here that was a similar story, where it was a really bad area near a housing project, and, you know, there was people in the, it was like a wooded area, and the drugs, and someone got killed there, shot, and, you know, so the town helped us. They actually knocked down the street, the trees, opened that space up, and built raised beds there, because who knows what was in the ground, so lots of raised beds. And right next to this housing project, there was a gated community, because it's near a train station, gated community with commuters of well-off people going to the city for their jobs. And it brought the two communities together, both doing gardening, and it just transformed the whole community. It's amazing. And, you know, they gave it to the town, supposedly gave it as a temporary space, but at this point, I don't think they're going to move it. It's been such a success.
That gives me goosebumps. You know, that's beautiful. That's what it's all about.
Really, that is what it's all about. So tell us a little bit more about the Ground Up, the high school program. I know you say you're building leaders there, a leadership program. Can you tell us a little bit more about that program?
Yeah, so I think back to when I was in high school, and I just am in awe that these kids sign up in the numbers that they do for this program, because it's very intensive.
How many kids, and what is the time commitment?
Right now, we have 17 leaders involved, and we always have more that can't make the large commitment, so they volunteer to help out in different capacities. Uh-huh. But our leaders commit to a minimum of 1 hour a week from a service year that begins in September and goes all the way through August. And then sometimes if we have special events, and then, of course, our dinners and things like that, those are extra hours that they are they have to participate in at least 4 major events per year. And they have a very intensive in the beginning. They're learning about food systems. Those that it's not their first year are helping to lead those discussions and teach the others what they have already learned in previous years. Mm-hmm. And then they move into, you know, analyzing. They get skills in assessing their community and then interpreting that data, and then they take that without my guidance and input, because I really do enjoy seeing them come up with things that are very creative and out-of-the-box thinking. So they come up with ideas. They generate all kinds of wild and crazy ideas. I tell them to dream big, and they have, you know, this whole wall filled with ideas of how they can address the gaps and issues that they found in their community. And then they hone in on just one. They, you know, they have to decide as a group which one they're going to address and then develop a plan. So that all takes until probably about February, March. So, like, right about now, we're really starting to develop our plan for 2019 and what they're going to implement through the end of August.
Mm-hmm.
And then they take it and they run with it.
Uh-huh. What have they come up with for this year? Can you share?
Yeah, so this year they are really excited about the progress from last year with the food rescue program. We actually have a group of them that are going to New Orleans next weekend to present at a conference, One World Everybody Eats conference, about what they've done, what they've accomplished. And they want to expand on that and do it more frequently. They've written a couple grants that they've received one so far so that they can have food storage. You know, it requires freezers and refrigeration and all of that stuff. And they want to expand on that and then also take their community composting program and broaden it into a more, they're going to partner with their garbage pickup company and develop a composting pickup.
Oh, excellent, excellent.
Yeah.
I don't know if you are all familiar with the different food rescuing apps, but that's a really exciting area that I'm just seeing popping up left and right. I mean, one that's been around for a while is Ample Harvest. I had Gary Oppenheimer on my show years ago, but his website or his app is to connect home growers, you know, gardeners who all of a sudden, you know, all your cucumbers are ready this week and you have way too many cucumbers that you can possibly eat, and all your friends also grow cucumbers and they're just, so you can't, don't even have friends you can give them to. So this is an app that you can plug in to and say, I have cucumbers, and find a food pantry that would like your cucumbers or your apples or whatever it is that you have a lot of. So that's one, that's Ample Your Harvest. Then there's a Share Meal app, which is a student-run app at colleges. And so it's actually you share your meal plan because, you know, parents have to buy these meal plans ahead of time. And then sometimes the kids just can't eat all the food that they're supposed to eat or that they're signed up for. So so you can share those meals that have already been paid for with a student that doesn't have that. So that's a really nice one. Rescuing Leftover Cuisine is another app where you can plug in with and rescue food from other restaurants. Restaurants will, you know, take a picture of what they have left over. And actually, no, this organization, someone signs up with this organization, Rescuing Leftover Cuisine, and they pick up the leftover food and they bring it to the soup kitchen that's closest and ready to take it. Another one is Food Cloud, which connects businesses with charities. And then Olio is a really nice one. That's sharing food with your neighbors. You know, if you have extra food, you take a picture of it and, you know, a neighbor, someone else in your area can say, oh, I'll come over for that. And then another night you share, you know, so that's really nice.
I love that.
And then
that one's probably my favorite. I really like that.
Yeah, it's really nice. It's called Olio. And then Karma is one that's in New York City and Brooklyn. It's not out here in the island yet, so I don't know if it's in Connecticut, but it's restaurants and cafes are signing up. And it's for them, it's just a win-win model. I mean, when they have food and it's getting towards the end of the day, they can discount it on this website and sell it for like half price or a quarter of the price. And so, you know, people can come pick up their dinner on their way home at a much more affordable price. So that's a really nice one, too, and that's called Karma. But anyway, that's just a handful off the top of my head. There's just so many, you know, and that's something that your kids could also think about doing because they're so good at that stuff. You know, creating apps that can work within the community. You know, take a picture of the food, put it on, and somebody else can come and share it. Because, you know, I think all of us, I mean, because I'm cooking food all the time, it's hard to know how much to cook.
Mm-hmm.
You don't know how many people are going to be at the dinner that you're doing. And so you have to cook enough because you can't run out. You know, I mean, I used to have the phone number of Occupy Wall Street, Occupy Wall Street's kitchen in my phone, you know, and anytime I had a party and I had leftovers, I called the Occupy kitchen and I'd say, I'm coming over with, you know, three trays of salmon or three trays of this, or, you know, whatever it was. And it was wonderful. There was always people there hungry, ready to eat. So, it's, you know, it's nice for both sides. I mean, you know, as someone who's cooking all the time, I hate throwing food out. Right. And yet I do. You know, I know I'm, I participate in this food waste, and I really try not to, but it's so hard to do it. So
it is
also
very hard.
I try to remind people that your freezer is your friend. You know, as I get close to saying, oh, this is going to go bad before I could eat it, I package it into, like, you know, TV dinner-sized meals and just put it in the freezer. And that's helpful, too.
Yes, that's usually what we do at the end of our meals because, like you said, it's hard to gauge how many people are going to show up, and you don't want mm-hmm. to turn anyone away, run out of food. So we always have leftovers, and what we can't send home with people, you know, after we send some home with people, then we package things up and freeze them and then and distribute them. And we're fortunate that we are not the only community dinner program in our area, so we can then bring full trays to one that has one the next night, you know, so they have something
oh, that's nice.
Ready to serve.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, sometimes if you don't have enough left over to do that,
yeah.
It's hard when you have the middle amount, you know. It's like you don't have enough to bring to a soup kitchen. So, you know, you need to find neighbors, like I was saying. You know, that would be really nice. So what have been some of your greatest challenges in getting this off the ground or your greatest challenges going forward, would you say?
Well, aside from having a kitchen that travels, which is very challenging.
In your community centers, you don't have a kitchen?
There are basic kitchens, but I have to bring, you know, they'll have like a stove or most of the time, some of them don't even have that. But usually they'll have a stove and, you know, sinks and things like that. But I have to bring all of our pots and pans, our measuring, our utensils, our knives, cutting boards.
Yes, I know. I've done that.
Food.
Uh-huh.
Yep. It's a lot.
The schlepping factor.
So, you know, and that challenge is what it is. But, you know, the other challenges, like every nonprofit, you know, we struggle for funding. There's so many great ideas that we have, that things that we'd love to be doing. But the reality is that, you know, you need to have the funds to do it. And we can't rely entirely on volunteers. That's not fair to them. And so, you know, having enough staff to be able to implement the programs can be challenging. Mm-hmm. And you know, and that's not unique to us. Everyone has, I think anyone in a nonprofit has those challenges. And then I think some of the other challenges I touched on earlier that, you know, society doesn't take our young people seriously. And that is really more frustrating than challenging to us, you know, because we know what they're capable of, and mm-hmm. we know their commitment level. And
are you familiar with Stephen Mitz, the gentleman I was talking about at the beginning of the show?
Yes, yes.
Yes. He's so inspirational. And when you see what he's getting these kids to do, I mean, they're going to Abu Dhabi and, you know, putting green roasts and transforming a desert into a green space. I mean, it's just amazing.
Yeah, we don't give our kids enough credit.
Right,
And so that to me is very frustrating because, you know, I know they're capable and I want to give them that freedom to go out and advocate for themselves. But then when the adults aren't listening and taking them seriously, that that can be a roadblock for them and make them discouraged and rightfully so. So that mm-hmm. is definitely a challenge. But, you know, we see that changing as in our community as they see their witness to what our young people are capable of. I feel like my role is to shine the spotlight on them. So while they're doing all the work, I'm, you know, the one cheering them on and shining the spotlight on them so that everyone sees what they're capable of and can begin to take them seriously.
Right, right. Absolutely. You know, and that's why I brought up the app issue, because it's the young people that can come up with the apps, not my generation, that's for sure. You know, they're raised with this knowledge, and they can do it and understand it so much easier. And, yeah, they're great. If you leave them to their creativity and their ability to think, I can do it, you know, the little engine that could, you know, as opposed to the engine that couldn't.
Right.
It's just such a difference. You know, if you give them that confidence, it's amazing what, young people can do.
Yes. Yeah, they have that energy that, you know, tends to peter out as you get older.
Uh-huh. So aside from hopefully getting this new space, when will you know about this new space?
Well, it's been an ongoing process. We, this week, got approval from the town to go ahead and start fundraising for it. So they are excited about it. But, you know, being fiscally responsible, they want to make sure that we're doing everything properly. Mm-hmm. So we're in close communication with them and making that work. But, you know, it's a little daunting. So now as we enter the fundraising phase, it's $2.75 million that we got to raise in order to get it off the ground. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, which is, you know, overwhelming, but, you know, like
well,
that saying,
you,
what's that saying?
Before we run out of time, because we're almost out of time, share with everyone your website, your contact info, and where that fundraising page, where they'll find that fundraising page if they want to donate.
Oh, absolutely. So nourishmysoul.org is our website. My contact information, I can always be reached by email, alicia@nourishmysoul.org, and on the website has all of that information. My email phone number is 860-982-6831. Feel free to call, ask any questions.
And Alicia is spelled A-L-I-C-I-A, for those who don't.
Correct.
Alicia.
Yes.
Okay.
Thank you.
Sure. Well, thank you, Alicia, so much for joining me today. I'm so excited about your organization. It sounds great. Anytime I meet someone who's empowering our young people to take up healthy eating, it's a plus. And, you know, the more that people are doing this, the better it is for the planet. So good work, and thank you.
Thank you. Thank you
sure.
so much
and
for
everyone,
having me.
Sure. And everyone for listening, thank you so much for joining us. You've been listening to Bhavani at IE Green on the Progressive Radio Network. See you next week. Bye for now.